From Aspen Public Radio, this is Curated, stories on the artists who visit and live in the Roaring Fork Valley. I'm Claire Woodcock, arts and culture reporter here at Aspen Public Radio. It is Monday, July 31st. It was unusually rainy in Carbondale over the weekend, but that didn't stop anyone from celebrating the 46th annual Mountain Fair. It drew crowds in the thousands and volunteers that span generations. From painting and dancing, spoken word and song, to pie baking and wood splitting competitions, this fair is emblematic of this town's creative spirit. The theme of this year's festival was water, appropriate considering the weekend's sporadic monsoons and welcomed with open arms by fairgoers. Last year I read this book called The Water Knife by Paolo Bacigalupi. He's from Paonia, Colorado. It's a dystopian novel where the southwestern states are competing with each other for water during a catastrophic drought. This book was a terrifying read, opening my eyes to a reality that inches closer with every drop taken from the Colorado River. Not to mention the health of our local rivers are being closely monitored. News reports that have come out of places like Flint, Michigan or Standing Rock, South Dakota highlight the issue of water with more gravity. So what does art have to do with it? This week's episode follows the theme of the fair's impact on us as human beings and how it inspired a community of creatives to take action. First, we go behind the scenes of the fair to talk with Carbondale Arts Executive Director and a volunteer pegged as the next generation of Mountain Fair. We also hear from two Standing Rock water protectors and music from a local band. Thanks for tuning in and stay with me. Walking into the handmade tent behind the amphitheater in Soper's Park last Thursday, volunteers, mostly millennials, were setting up for the fair. Sitting in the photo booth area is Amy Kimberly, executive director of Carbondale Arts. She describes what she sees.
Three racks chock full of all sorts of costumes. We have themes for the Mountain Fair this year. Our major theme is water, and so Friday night is Under the Sea, Saturday is Shiny, and Sunday is Storm. So we have an array of costumes here that could fit in those categories.
So, Amy, I want to ask you, what made you choose the theme water for this year's Mountain Fair?
I was at Standing Rock, so I think that's where it first really impacted me. But water has always, through my adult years, been that thing that we were going to have wars over in my future. When I was younger, I always heard, like, the wars of the future are going to be water. And in many ways, we are in that future, and water is a critical issue for the West, for here, and throughout the world.
Tell me about your time at Standing Rock. What did you see? How long were you there? What did you take away from that?
Well, I was only there a week, but, you know, I took away a lot of things, and not all of them were real positive. I was excited to be able to see our indigenous population really feel empowered again and be in a life and live a life that honored them. So that protest was extremely important for them. They just were able to live a kind of lifestyle that they don't, even on the reservations, get to live in teepees, really standing up, dealing with nature, being at one with nature. Everybody was helping. It was very communal. So if you needed a coat, you just went to a place and you could get any coat that happened to be there. Or if you needed food, you could go someplace and get food. It was a very communal lifestyle. It felt really good. I also saw, a police state, and that was really hard to see too. There were guns pointed on us all the time, airplanes flying overhead, monitoring everything that was going on. So I think it was kind of a juxtaposition of what some of our future is going to look like.
Okay, and how is the theme for this year's Mountain Fair different than past years?
You know, all our themes, I think, really reflect what's important to us as a community, and this is no different. It's actually the same. We really value our water. We have three incredible rivers right at our fingertips here in the valley, and I think many people in the valley utilize those rivers for recreation, for fishing, for economy. So I think it just follows in the footsteps of what is important to us and what we want to honor.
And how does the theme of water play into the arts here in Carbondale?
Well, I think it's very inspiring. And as you'll see throughout the festival, a lot of people have been inspired by it.
With us is James Gorman, a production manager with the fair. Kimberly says he represents the young people that will keep Mountain Fair thriving for years to come.
A lot of it's just setting up the grounds, setting up the stage, the backstage, and got a whole crew that helps out during the festival. We make sure the perimeter, help secure the perimeter, and also help with the bands, getting everything on and off the stage, as well as just dealing up with any issues that happen during the event. With me, I've brought in a bit of a younger crew that's getting more involved every year and we're trying to learn what all the folks do in their positions here and have been doing for the last 15, 20 years and are slowly starting to take over and evolve these positions.
Why now? Why the big push now for the younger generation to step in?
I'm not sure. I think I just kind of stumbled in. I started volunteering, and it's also what I do. I do a lot of production work, and I have a team that works with me kind of regularly, and a lot of them just all jumped in, and it feels right, and everybody's excited. I don't think there's been younger people on the crew for a while, so I think everybody got excited with a little bit of fresh and younger energy, and seeing more and more of it every year.
Amy, is that something that you can speak to, why the push for the younger generation to step up this year?
The woman who started the fair 46 years ago is still part of the fair. She runs the drum circle. But obviously, a lot of the folks that have been doing these volunteer jobs, and that's a key part of the Mountain Fair, is most everyone volunteers. It's a rite of passage in the community. James, he probably, you know, came as a little kid and played at Mountain Fair, that kind of thing. Then you grow up and you suddenly start volunteering. We have 12-year-old kids that volunteer. So it's kind of part of your growing up. However, the supervisor position is a lot more work than just coming in and doing your 4 hours and getting your T-shirt. And so that had always been held by the elders, maybe. And the time has come. The next generation needs to take over. We're looking at our 50-year celebration in 4 years. And, you know, I'm definitely looking at just being able to come to the fair and have some fun. And James is really savvy and knowledgeable and brings such an amazing crew of people that really get what the fair is about. And that's the important thing about these supervisors. They hold the knowledge, the history, and the vibe of the fair in their hands.
The vibe of it is like no other event. I work and volunteer at a lot of different events, and Mountain Fair has its own special character and sense of community that don't really get elsewhere, and I just wanted to be a part of the vibe and help keep the vibe alive. And I think that's a lot of what is happening now, is everyone wants to make sure that the vibe and the character moves on, as well as just the event itself, but coming across in a special way.
So this is kind of a passing of the torch in a sense.
Yeah. You know, when I came on board, I was kind of younger then. I mean, which wasn't that long ago, maybe 14 or 15 years ago. But it's always been a concern of some of the volunteers. We're all in our 60s now, 60, 65, 70. And our stamina is just not what it used to be. And the fair definitely takes some stamina to put on.
I think a lot of why people like volunteering and why it's fun being a part of an event is the sense of that you helped create this thing that's happening and create this experience that you can't get any other way.
That was Amy Kimberly and James Gorman from the nonprofit Carbondale Arts. You're listening to Curated on Aspen Public Radio. Coming up, a local band incites a flash mob at the fair. But first we hear from Shikawakan Sapa and Naki Wisipiwi, both water protectors from the Cheyenne River Tribe. I caught up with them at Mountain Fair, where they were in town holding drum circles. They've asked me to use their native names in the story. They say native dance and song unique to their culture gave them power during the fight for water at Standing Rock, South Dakota.
I grew up in different places in the system, but I ended up going back home to my people, so, and that's where I am right now. And that's where I'll be till I go. What brought me back was I seen how my people were living, and they weren't living good, and it was unhealthy, so I decided to stay and do what I can for them. I seen people living on the streets. I seen people caught up in alcoholism, drug abuse, and all of that stuff. So I decided to stay and do what I can, and it also helped me find a good path to walk on and to show young kids that path that they can walk also, and it helps. It gives them something to look forward to. So that's what we do most of our time, is we work with youth.
And so we came up with some ideas to help our youth. So one of the things we do is a youth victory ride that we do from South Dakota to Montana to the Battle of Little Bighorn. So we do that once a year. And then throughout the year, we work with all the youth to, we teach them our culture. Everything that we know, that we teach our youth. And it's quite a bit. And you can't fit it all at one time. So we kind of do it certain times. It depends on what month and stuff we work with the kids. Because they are our future. I want to make a better place for my grandkids, for younger generations to come. Like he said, on a reservation, we do have a lot of alcohol, drugs, suicide, gang activities, all kinds of stuff like that going on, just like anywhere else. But our reservations are almost like a third world country, because when you go there, it's so different. Our unemployment rate is high. It's just poverty, a lot of poverty-stricken areas. We have communities so spread out that there are no jobs. There's nowhere they can work. And so it's really difficult. It's a hard life for these kids. And I think that's what why we do what we do.
Okay, Standing Rock became one of the biggest spiritual gatherings that ever hit the earth, Mother Earth. And we were able to show the world, the people, that there is people out there that care about Mother Earth and the water and all the elements that exist with the earth. And we've seen a lot of frontline action. We've seen a lot of in-camp action. But our people, that when we went there as Mini Kojus, or as the band of Mini Kojus, we went to pray, and that's all we did for 8 months. Was we had prayer meetings, prayer gatherings, and teachings with the youth that were there and whoever else wanted to learn. But other than that, I think that Standing Rock kind of woke a lot of people up throughout the world, and let them know that we can gather as people and as different nations. We can come together as one, and we can learn to get along culturally as well as spiritually and prayerfully.
Living there was like an experience of freedom, being able to be who we are as Lakota people, because when you live on a reservation, it's you're told what to do, how to live, everything. But when we were at Ochetti, it was just an experience of freedom, of being able to live our ways, to sing, to pray, and every day. And back home, they push that colonized world on our people, and they can't do it. And that's what a lot of our people are not used to. That. So generations of what the government has done to our people, it's not good. I mean, and so when we went to Ocheti Shakongwe, it was that. It was just a feeling of being able to be free, you know. And so it was really, really good. I mean, it was just awesome because we get to pray every day. I mean, every night we did prayer circles. Him and I sang all the time, and it was just awesome, you know. And you don't have to have anybody standing there saying, you got to do this, you got to do that, and you got to live this way, you got to live that way. You can't do sweats, you can't sing, you can't, because in a housing at home, you can't sing past a certain time. You can't put up sweat lodges. You can't do stuff like that. And at Ocheti, you can do that. And so it was really different. So that was my experience, you know, and I loved it. Yeah, we were there from beginning to end when they shut it down. Yeah. The youth that did what they did, to me, woke up the world and told the world that you can stand up for what we call Unchimaka, which is Mother Earth. And you can fight for her. You can fight for the water, the animals, and the living beings that are here on Mother Earth. So that's what I got from it. And what the youth have done is to wake up the world, and that's what they did. And that was a, what they call it?
Prophecy.
That was a prophecy by our people anyway. We just didn't know where, how that was gonna happen. And so when Standing Rock happened, we knew then that prophecy was coming true. So that's what, for me, it had woken up the world and saying, hey, we need to fight for Mother Earth, you know, and that's to me, that's what I got out of it.
We witnessed a lot of frontline action from rubber bullets, mace, sound. Water canyons and sound booms or whatever they call that. But then we also, we witnessed a lot of negative stuff, but we also witnessed a lot of good things. And it's the negative stuff that made me want to create more positive stuff. And some of the things that we learned and seen, you would never see again on this earth. And one of them was, all the tribes coming together. We were taught by an entity who was who and what was what, but when all these tribes came together from Canada, from Montana, all the states, we learned that what we were taught was different. It wasn't truth. And when all these tribes came with their people, their prayers, they brought they brought a message of hope. They brought a message of power. They brought a message of prayer. Most of all, they brought a message of coming together, unity. So that's what I witnessed and seen. And despite all the negative that was going on and stuff, we didn't pay attention to that. We just paid attention to all the positive stuff happening and tried to make it more.
The singing and dancing was always part of our life as Native people, and I grew up with it. We were taught everything about our culture, our language, everything, the songs, the dances, everything. We just grew up with it, and it for me and my family, it means a whole lot. To do that, and so I keep referring back to the history of our people, of what the government has done to our peoples and stuff, and what they've tried to take away our language, and our culture, and but we kept doing it, and we got a lot of people died for it, you know, and wouldn't give up. And so it's still here. It's still with us. We have a really, really rich, and it's even our language has feelings. It's a feeling from your heart, and so it's important that we keep those. And so It's very important for us, for my people, that we keep that. And so it's always been with us. Yeah. We realized that when we were at Standing Rock that people started learning about our culture at Standing Rock. The more people came in, the more they learned about our ways and our culture, which they never knew before. And when we meet people, they're like, we never knew, you know, about you guys. We know history told us this and history books told us this, told us that, but we never actually knew, you know. And so they learned a lot from us. And I'm glad that happened, because when they learned from us about praying, that's the most important thing that we taught everybody, is about praying, and about the songs and about our culture, they took it with them. They took a piece of that and went with them, so they know who we are and what we're about. We're very spiritual people, you know.
Nature took care of itself, because when you came to camp, and if you ask anybody that went there, when you walked through the front gate or the south gate, you felt something, or something touched your spirit or your heart. Something, you can't explain it. It was a feeling. And to me, that feeling was Mother Earth, in a spiritual sense, Mother Earth reaching out and touching everybody that went there and saying, it's about time, to come back to prayer. And we were able to teach people that never knew what prayer was. You know, people, prayer in our culture is not kneeling down and you know, it's more or less of acknowledging life and how sacred and beautiful it really is, and why we understand why everything has a spirit, everything has life, you know, especially water. Water is life. Without it, nothing will grow, nothing will live. And so that was part of our way of life too, was protecting Mother Earth and all the elements, which is water, fire, air, and the earth itself. And so becoming, they gave us the label as water protectors, but we've always had that all our lives. And it was just put in the English language. But in our language, you know, we know who we are, why we're here, and what we got to do. So, and a lot of it is learning how to teach people to pray, you know, and it's a very powerful thing once you learn. When Standing Rock went up, we knew, as Native Americans, we knew that it would never be over. To some people, they say it's over, but to us, it was just the beginning of prophecy. And prophecy is something that was given or brought upon every race of people on the earth, even the animals. Prophecy was brought to us through the people, and that's what makes prophecy happen, is when you're taught. We were taught oral history, not written history, because oral history cannot change. Written history, you can always erase one word and put your own word in there, and it changes. But oral history, when it was handed down to us, is thousands and thousands of years old, so we know who we are and what we got to do. And the non-natives, when they left with something that was positive, knowing that, you know, I really can't speak for them. All I can say is that there was something there that didn't end. It was a beginning of something. Like you wake something up, you wake a giant up. Yeah. Or you wake a earthquake up, or you wake a volcano, something powerful, spiritual. And that's what everybody felt that. Everybody knows that spirituality needs to exist on Mother Earth in order for people to live, reproduce, and eat. Just kind of like made people, give them something to be proud of.
Shikawakan Sapa and Naki Wisipiwi, water protectors from the Cheyenne River Tribe, share their dispatches from Standing Rock, South Dakota. Now we hear from Carbondale's very own Mountain Folk Americana band, Let Them Roar. This is their song, called One Water, that literally incited a flash mob last Friday during Mountain Fair's opening ceremonies.
One water is all, water is one, water is one, water is all, water is one. One water is one water is one water.
all water is one, water is all, water is one. All water is one, water is all, water is one. All water is one, water is all, water is one. All water is one, water is all, water is one. Water is.
That was the song One Water by Carbondale's Let Them Roar. To hear more from this local Americana band, visit letthemroar.com and be on the lookout for more flash mobs. Here's what else is happening this week in the Valley. Tonight, Thunder River Theater Company's Devo Cabaret presents Henry Award-winning performer Bob Moore. He brings his one-man cabaret show, A Man of Many Hats, A Lifetime of Musical Theater and Song, to the stage at 7:30 p.m. in Carbondale. Tuesday, conceptual artist Lawrence Wiener will be giving an artist talk at 6 o'clock p.m. at the Aspen Art Museum. Wednesday, the Aspen Philharmonic Orchestra will perform in the Benedict Music Tent at 6 o'clock p.m. Also on Wednesday, the final Summer of Music concert in Glenwood Springs will feature Peter Rowan at Two Rivers Park, starting at 6:30 p.m. Thursday, the Ancor Logos Gallery presents America at Heart, Valleys to Peaks, a solo exhibition of works by Dan Young starting at 5 p.m. in Basalt. And then Carbondale Arts will present an art talk and slideshow with the artists of the nonprofit's current show, Rudis, Origin, Interpretation, Place, in the R2 Gallery of the Launchpad. That talk begins at 5:30 p.m. Thursday. And then on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, Stage of Life Theater Company presents the musical Annie Get Your Gun at 7 p.m. at the 3rd Street Center in Carbondale with a matinee Sunday at 2 p.m. Art Aspen returns to the Aspen Ice Garden Thursday through Sunday, and the arts campus at Willett's new space, The Temporary, opens Sunday with its first show being Jessica Olosery starting at 6:30 p.m. That's all that's curated this week. For more on arts and culture, tune into Morning Edition weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m. and visit us online at aspenpublicradio.org, where all episodes of this show live. I produced today's show with help from Kristen Kay. It was edited by Carolyn Zachariasen. Greg Lout and Jason Patton of Boulder wrote the show's theme tune, Omnicord Entrance. Special thanks to the Stefan Edlis and Gail Neeson Foundation, which aims to support the arts, community, and outreach. Continue to follow Curated APR on Facebook for news and updates on arts in the Valley. I'm Claire Woodcock at the Edlis Neeson Arts and Culture Desk. Thank you so much for listening. Curated is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.